cloud. Okay, our speaker today is John Dee, and he will now share his experience for 20 minutes on step 12. Go ahead, John, it's all yours.
John Alcoholic, I'm coming to you live from San Francisco, California. Good to see everybody. It's my first time here. My sobriety date is, I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety, a garden variety alcoholic. My sobriety date is October 17th, 2003. My sponsor was Wes R. from Grand Forks, North Dakota. I have worked all 12 steps through conventional big book methods, through the Dallas B sheets, through the Clarence Snyder workbook, as well, of course, as the BBA. And I have taken all those experiences seriously. I exerted my effort to the best of my ability to complete the steps under those different formats. And I'm here to tell you all of it, the cumulative effect of all of that was sufficient enough to keep away from a drink for the last 18 years. But more importantly, or just as importantly, it's allowed me to function as a grown-up in society, to see things and to have realizations that I never considered prior to doing the work. Just a little bit more BBA, good stuff. I met Dan Sherman before he passed. I've listened to Joe Hawk quite a bit. I've listened to Don Pritz quite a bit in the Golden Slipper Group from Manitoba, Canada. And I jive to their message and it really resonates with me because I look at the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and 12-step work in general as a design for living, which obviously I had to be separated from alcohol in order to engage in this design for living, but that's truly how I view it. And, you know, it's effective and it's helpful, which is probably the most important data point for me. So, you know, step 12 is kind of like the kitchen sink, right? It kind of encapsulates everything in my experience. So having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to the alcoholic who still suffers and to practice these principles in all our affairs. So three parts to the 12th step. I'll address the spiritual awakening. Before I could have a spiritual awakening, what's the opposite of that? I mean, walking around dead, incredibly spiritually sick, hopelessly addicted to alcohol and in the depths of full-blown alcoholism. And that's my experience. What I did not know is that my body was different from the average temperate drinker. What I didn't know is that the mental obsession is what tricks me into thinking the next drink will be different and it won't really get me this time. No one's gonna know. And once that's fully taking effect, the body just follows. The muscles pick up the drink goes into the system, the allergy is kicked off, and I'm off on another drunk. That happened over and over and over in my experience. How did I get a sobriety date? I thought I was gonna get a sobriety date way earlier. Didn't work out that way. I truly believe God gave me my sobriety date if I didn't get to pick when I got sober. And I run with that my entire life. The spiritual malady, you know, yes. Turned inward, stuck in self, stuck in resentment, stuck in fear. So until I fully grasped these paradigms and didn't work on them until I grasped that I was that sick in all three phases of the disease, I couldn't make any progress in the program. And that, you know, awakening played out over time. I did have a spiritual awakening. I had a deep spiritual awakening, and that was primarily kicked off by inventory and amends. Joe Hawk talks about how free do you want to be with the amends, right? But before I got to amends, and of course, all 12 steps, I mean, the annotation from the BBA, turning statements into questions, reading footnotes, learning the set-aside prayer, learning how to be in the center of the triangle working all three sides of the triangle, unity, service, and recovery. These things all were paramount in me getting sober, but the rubber for me really met the road when I inventoried, when I identified core fears, when I was able to see the seven areas of self right here on the four-step inventory, spelled out in a way that I had never done that before. When I got to see how self-esteem and pride were tripping me up, equal to that were my ambitions. What I want to happen here, what I want you to think of me, how I want you to see me. These are all the ambitions that I carried around with me till I was 37 years old. That ran my life. My core fears in inventory were revealed. You know, my core fears is I'm afraid. I'm selfish. That's not really a fear. That's just a behavior. My core fears of not being good enough, right? Being defective. Another core fear of mine, like this one runs super deep, is being disrespected. How dare you do that? Don't you know that this is the way you're supposed to function? What is wrong with you? And I learned through inventory and had my awakening by realizing and fully understanding that when this finger goes that way, there's literally 10 coming back this way. And I didn't have the ability to see that in my entire life. And it wasn't until I did this deep dive into the steps that I was able to see that and, more importantly, get free of it based on the maintenance of a spiritual condition. My shortcomings were extreme. I was afraid. I was selfish. I was inconsiderate. I was a character assassinator. I gossiped. I was flaky. I was a taker, and I was incredibly irresponsible. Not a successful roadmap on how to live happy, joyous, and free. That was where the rubber met the road for me. Where am I to blame the fourth column? And how have I engaged in these same behaviors that I'm so resentful at others for? That was the light bulb. That was the Zen moment for me. The realization of the roadmap and the data of my life and how it had played out, how it had tripped me up. I had never, ever looked at my side, ever, until I was 37 years old. I mean, crazy. So that's when my spiritual awakening started to really blossom. And then the amends process, I'll talk about that real quick and then move on. The amends process. I was clear of the harms that I had done others through the inventory work. I was clear on my errand on going to make the amends and what exactly I was amending. I was clear on a minor annoyance versus a grave injury that I had done another person, place, or institution. The amends were incredibly powerful. I had prepared myself, and more importantly than that, I was prepared for the consequences and ready and willing to accept those consequences of my actions because I brought God with me. I didn't know God, but through the inventory process and through following instructions and being sponsored correctly, I was able to take God with me on those amends. And they worked out how they worked out. I got to pay people. I got to get on airplanes, pay people back, own my behavior, hear for the first time in my entire life what they experienced as a result of my disease, and hear it and welcome the feedback with a clear mind. That rocketed me into another state that I'd never been into. And it brought me so close to God, and it brought me close to the people in many instances. How do I carry the message today in Alcoholics Anonymous? Well, it was an extremely awkward start. My first few attempts were miserable failures, even though I had guidance on how to do it through the literature and through sponsorship. I was taught things when I'm sharing with others in a one-on-one situation where I'm working with somebody, and when I'm sharing at a meeting, I was taught that I speak from experience. I don't speak from an opinion-based platform. I was taught to not say we and you when I'm sharing, when I'm carrying the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. I can't speak for you. I can't say we. I don't know your experience. I sure as hell can't tell you how you should be working your program. It's totally useless, ineffective, and a waste of everybody's time. What I have is I have my experience, both drunk and hopeless, and I have my experience, both sober and having had a spiritual awakening that I can pass on. So I'm very diligent. And, you know, I have, through a lot of trial and error and through a lot of experiences sponsoring others and being sponsored and going through the steps in various ways, that is all bankable experience that has helped me, you know, be an effective sponsor, right? So when I initially started sponsoring people and trying to carry the message, I was of the mind frame that I have a solution and you better do it or else. That's how righteous I was and how confused I was when I was first starting out working with others. That has changed into warmth, kindness, and love, empathy. But I also appreciate accountability. And I ask that of somebody before I work with them to be accountable. And then I hold them accountable in a reasonable way. I just basically do what we agreed to do. And if it works, great. If it doesn't, I'm sorry. I'll be here for you if you have any questions, and I would relish the opportunity to work with you again. That's how I try and carry the message, you know? And I don't engage in frothy emotional appeal anymore. I go up to somebody who I can see is dying, and I just extend my hand because I know how they felt. I was the exact same way when I first went to a meeting back in the days when we had in-person meeting. Practicing the principles in all my affairs, you know, I ask myself, do I have discipline? Do I ask God for guidance every day? Am I in page 84 to 88 every day? One of my favorite lines in the entire big book is on page 20. Our very lives as ex-problem drinkers depend upon our constant thought of others and how we may help meet their needs. Yes, I understand there's we in there, but changing those into I statements, you know, my very life as an ex-problem drinker depends upon my constant thought of others and how I can help meet their needs. I have that in my iPhone calendar. That goes off 365 days a year at 8:30 a.m. Think of others and how I can help meet their needs. I can't just race out the door and do that. I have to meditate. I have to get quiet in the morning. I have to visualize turning out to the world and to God's universe instead of turning into my will and being stuck in the bondage of self. I had a great opportunity to practice some principles earlier this morning. I was working on Saturday at another facility that I don't normally work at. And the plant manager sent me a note this morning saying that two of the employees of the plant complained about how I interacted with them. What's my first old behavior and tendency is to just fire right back defending myself. I do not like hearing that. I do not like acting that way. And I sure as hell don't like being called on the carpet for it. So I did some deep thinking. I asked for direction. And it occurred to me that it was extremely loud in the plant. Everybody was masked up. I was having to raise my voice way more than normal. And I was hand gesturing. Well, people that don't speak great English, they didn't know how to interpret that. And they took it as me being overly aggressive. And it is what it is. I want to go out and fix it. I want to drive down 90 miles to where I was and go apologize to every one of them. And I certainly made that clear in my reply. But I have the ability to not blame others, and I have the ability to just sit with that ugly feeling that even though I had no intention of harming others, I didn't make somebody else's day. And that sucks. That hurts. I came up short, but I can own it. I can eat it, and I can sit on it and do better next time. And most importantly, I can ask for direction on how to approach it better this time. You know, I really appreciated the 3-minute meditation. Quieting the mind, tuning in. God, things go so much better when I do that. So the 12 step for me, the 12 step process, the BBA process, just my experience in life inside 12 step recovery and practicing the design for living has been something that I never could have expected. I love the fellowship. I love my fellow members, and I'm just grateful to be here. So thanks for asking me to share my experience. You're muted, Sandy.